may not be applied by the city. So what I was going to say, let me finish answering your question this way. I was going to say, if you determine to apply all of these sections, we think the hearings officer's decision to be up should be upheld. He correctly applied the law, and the evidence supports his application of the law. But I also agree with you that these standards, many of them are objective, and I did not bring my May 27th.
Objective or subjective?
I agree with you that they are subjective. They are not clear and objective. They require the exercise of discretion. I didn't bring my May 27th letter up to the podium with me, but it's in the record. What we've said is there is a needed housing statute in the state of Oregon. It's 197.3031. It says that all needed housing includes attached and detached single-family dwellings. So this application is one for needed housing. It goes on to say in ORS 197.307 sub 4 that the city may adopt and apply only clear and objective standards to needed housing. Now, the needed housing statute, just a bit of an editorial, is a sleeper in this state. Many cities are aware of it for the first time in an appeal, but I think it's very clear that phrases like on balance and compatibility are subjective, and the city should not apply them. So my argument to you is the same one I made to the hearings officer. On the one hand, if you apply them, you can find that the standards are met and you should approve the application. Alternatively, we think that they shouldn't be applied at all because they are subjective, and state law prohibits the application of subjective approval criteria to a needed housing application such as this.
And ultimately, if that ever got tested, what? The final LUBA would have a say on that, but the final say might be a court?
Well, it has been recently tested by LUBA in a case called Parkview Terrace LLC v. City of Grants Pass. That decision was issued last month. City of Grants Pass denied an application that involved needed housing for 7 or 8 reasons. The petitioner appealed to LUBA, and LUBA reversed the city, not remanded, but reversed, saying for multifamily housing, now this is single family, but for that application, which was multifamily housing, that's needed housing. Under the statute, you cannot apply subjective criteria. Those were the sole basis for the City of Grants Pass decision in that case, subjective criteria. So it's possible it could go to the Court of Appeals, Commissioner Fish, but in my personal opinion, not to give you legal advice, my personal opinion is the statute is very clear, and it's also very clear, and by the way, I was just going to note this, both the hearings officer and I wrote the pages down. Hearings officer at page 13 of his decision and the Woodstock Neighborhood Association's appeal statement at page 2 both agree that, for example, compatible is a subjective term. So that to me seems to be the issue everyone is focused on. I think we meet that standard, but I also think it's a subjective term that can't be applied to a needed housing application. I apologize for being so long-winded.
Go ahead and resume the clock.
Thank you. So based on all of that, we agree with the staff report originally. We agree with the hearings officer's decision. There's nothing in the appeal that contains substantial evidence or legal argument that would, in my opinion, persuade the council to reverse the hearings officer. He did exactly what this council asks him to do, which is to fairly apply the law without regard to how many supporters or how many opponents there are, and he bases it on substantial evidence. So let me spend the last part of my 15 minutes addressing the statements by those supporting the appeal. Mrs. Griffin said that the new houses will be out of scale. Again, the record does not contain any evidence about what those new houses might look like or how high they might be. If it does, I would remind you that otherwise this we have to comply with the R2.5 zone. So whatever houses are built there will be built consistent with the standards of the R2.5 zone. But whether those houses are at or are out of scale or consistent with the scale, that's not a criterion for your consideration in this proceeding.
Let me just ask you a question.
Yes, sir.
We have plenty of hearings where the applicant voluntarily meets with the neighborhood to address those kinds of concerns, and ultimately, as happened actually recently, an appeal was withdrawn.
I was familiar with that one.
So any why in this case has there not been more effective diplomacy at the local level so that we don't have to address issues which, after listening to you now, I'm beginning to
wonder if
these issues are more complicated than even I thought coming into the hearing. So why hasn't it? Because we did have testimony from someone saying there had been virtually no discussions.
You did, and they are incorrect. Remember that my client is not the owner. My client is listed in the application as the developer. And I hesitate to stray from the record because I think it's important that you stay on the record, but I would only say I disagree with the testimony that said there's been no discussion with folks. I think that is wrong. But I will also say I agree with you. Even if it's not code requirement, I think there's an obligation to meet with folks and talk with them. And my understanding is my client has done just that. And I prefer not to, I think the rest of it's outside the record. So what I wanted to, Ms. Griffin's also argued that this application is out of character with the neighborhood. What's relevant is, I'll just repeat the criterion. The only relevant criterion that uses the word character is the purpose statement for 33611, which says these requirements ensure that lots are consistent with the desired character of the zone, the R2.5 zone, not the character of the neighborhood. So arguments about house style and compatibility with character of the neighborhood or the historic character of the neighborhood are beyond the approval criteria, and they're not something that the hearings officer considered, nor should he have done so. Ms. Spence read from a letter and had some testimony about the lot sizes. Again, I refer you to the map. If you look at the map, the area around this site is currently zoned R5, but the comprehensive plan designation is R2.5. That is what this applicant is doing, consistent with the comp plan. To the east across 40th Street is R5. There is no R7 zoning. I recognize that she was making perhaps a more conceptual argument about the size of the lots, but I just want to be clear that there is no R7 zoning in that area, and on this side of 40th Street, the comp plan calls for it to be R2.5, not R5. Mr. Anshot, and I apologize if I mispronounce his name, talked about traffic. Traffic is not a relevant approval criterion for the partition. It's relevant only to the zoning map amendment. The record reflects a TIA that PBOT reviewed and agreed with. Mr. DeFreitas testified at the hearings officer hearing and said there were no issues with traffic. You can find that discussed in the hearings officer decision at pages 4 and 8. Mr. Zigethy, and I would not want to try and spell his name either, talked about the lot sizes. I just repeat the same arguments. The solar access issue is an interesting one to me, and I have 3 points for that. First of all, regardless of whether you approve this or not, if homes get built there, they can still meet the R2.5 or R.5 standards, and they're going to be there. They're going to be of certain height and mass. Secondly, though, the sun rises in the east, traverses on the south horizon, and sets on the west. That's why the staff and the hearings officer made the point that the issue with solar access doesn't apply here, because these lots are to the north and the east of neighboring homes. If they were on the south side, there might be an issue, but there's not. And lastly, the solar access standards cited in the Woodstock Neighborhood Association appeals to solar standards, which I agree with Commissioner Fritz, are non-prescriptive, but they apply to solar standards for the homes being constructed. They offer no approval criteria with respect to impact on adjacent dwellings. So there's simply not an issue there that would cause the council to reverse the hearings officer. The 7-foot stone wall on Reedway Street, the evidence is that will not be a problem, but I will offer this. That is something that when the construction of these houses begins, I would commit, if my client is involved, we will go out there and meet with the neighbors and see what we can do about the stone wall. I don't think it's an appropriate condition, and Mr. DeFreitas didn't think it was an issue at the hearings officer, but it's something the neighbors have called to our attention, and we will commit to meeting on site to see what can be done about it. Ms. Lewin testified about solar access, and I think I've addressed that about as well as I can. Mr. Rowe talked about the preserving the historic character of the neighborhood. Again, that's not a relevant consideration. I appreciate the love they have for their homes in the neighborhood, but what we have to be concerned about is the approval criterion, and the same goes with Mr. Norwitz's testimony about neighborhood livability. It's not an approval criterion for these standards. I appreciate what Ms. Lyons had to say, although I would correct her testimony a bit. She said that the lots are smaller than allowed by the R2.5. That's not correct. If you look at the chart on page 11 in the hearings officer's decision, the lots meet the minimum lot size in the R2.5 zone. What's What the only deviation are the very small deviations on lot width for parcels 2 and 3. As I've said before, home styles are not in the record and they're not an issue for the approval criterion. Mr. Crater, I appreciated his testimony, especially his comments about Margaret Strawn, but issues regarding the structure are, again, not relevant to the approval criterion. So I conclude by saying that I probably sound like a broken record. We have to stick with the approval criteria. That's what the hearings officer did. Really, the only challenged approval criterion, the zoning map amendment is off the table. The only thing that's before you is whether you should affirm the hearings officer's decision to approve a 3-parcel land division, not 4 as we could have requested, but 3 so we can preserve the large house. And out of all the approval criteria involved in that, what it really comes down to is the chapter purpose statement, which requires us to respect the intensity of the zone, which we're doing. In fact, we're asking for less intensity than we would be allowed, and that we be compatible with the zone, which we are, which recognizes that you can have varying lot sizes. So we thank you for your time. We ask you to affirm the hearings officer's decision. If you have questions that you haven't asked us, please do so, and we'd be happy to answer them.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Questions? Okay, are there opponents of the appeal or people who support the applicant that wish to testify?
No one else signed up.
Okay. Then we will now move to a rebuttal of the appellant. Sure.
What's your basis for a continuous request?
Under state law, only a continuance is mandatory at the initial evidentiary hearing, which took place before the hearings officer. The council has the discretion to grant a continuance, but must do so within the confines of the 120-day rule. So it's not mandatory at this stage.
Where are we within the 120 days?
I think it's due this September 19th, is the last day. So.
And we have the option of asking the applicant to waive the 120 days.
You can.
Okay, rebuttal of the appellant. Ms. Griffiths, you have 5 minutes if you wish.
I have to say something about that. We're ready to talk about the same thing about the solar orientation.
Yeah, why don't you come up here and.
And if I'm incorrect in not understanding what just said by the counselor, but if you stand at the existing house and
so
face.
So you're offering the rebuttal.
I'm operating.
Okay.
So. Could you give his name again, please?
Les Sigethy.
Okay.
I'm sorry if I'm jumping ahead here.
No, that's all right.
Okay.
And Clara, start the clock. Yep. Okay.
Okay. If you stand at the existing home and face south, under the proposed plan, you will be looking at the wall of one of the house on the undersized lots. That is a fact. If you stand at the existing house and look west, you will be looking at the wall of the proposed house on the smaller lot. There's no way anyone can tell me, or you, or anyone else, that the sun will shine through those buildings into that lot. So directly, as was pointed out by the attorney, the sun travels on the south side. The south side of the existing house will be entirely blocked from the sun by these proposed buildings. Whether that is something you're allowed to consider or not after listing all of this, I don't understand. But that is a fact.
You have anything you wanted to add?
Well, if you actually look at the solar access regulations and the little diagrams that they have in those regulations, I don't know if that is in the record. You may have to look it up online. There's a little informational sheet. And one of somewhere in there it says something about, and it's referred to in the staff report, that the one sole house that is facing the north-south street, in a development should be wider rather than narrower. And in this case, I believe it's the most narrow of the 3 proposed lots and would cast significant shade on the home north of it. And I think you really should think about the woman who spoke earlier who lives to the west and down the hill, because she's already been impacted, she told us in the previous hearing, by another home that was built, another infill development on that same street that now blocks the morning light from coming into her kitchen. And this additional development will further block eastern light from reaching parts of her home or her yard. And I know eastern light is a particularly nice, it's a particularly important light and for people that live in a climate such as ours in the Northwest. So I would urge you to take the solar access regulations seriously, to actually study them, to actually look at the photo that I submitted in my testimony in the last hearing and resubmitted today with a little better caption, I would also urge you to think about this compatibility question, because I strongly disagree with the attorney's assertion that it's something that you cannot consider, and that it only refers to the density of a 2.5 zone. I believe that the intention of that word compatibility originally was written to refer to the character of a neighborhood, because that's what it says in the comp plan from which the code derived. Are you following me?
Could I make one other point?
Sure.
Sure. In regard to the offer by the attorney to do something about the driveway situation there, the fact of the matter is that lot is 7 feet at plus above the level of the street. You can do a lot of things with walls. You can take the stone wall down. You can make it do that. This still is the fact that lot is 7 feet above the street. So in the short period of time that this smaller lot will allow, someone's going to have to go down at a very steep angle onto it blindly onto the sidewalk. Nothing can change that with what we do with the wall. It's admirable to say that we will, but it won't. It's a very dangerous situation. There's no reason it should be made to exist.
And I want to make one more point, because the question has come up, what would the neighbors prefer? And I think that really still needs to be sorted out. I don't think there's any one preference. My personal preference would be to leave the property as is, to sell it to someone who would love to create a beautiful place out of what's there. But there are many possibilities. There's more than just two possibilities for redevelopment and lot division. And, for example, you could make the existing home into a duplex or a triplex. You could add an ADU that didn't tower over adjoining properties. There are many possibilities. We would love to discuss that with the developer and with the property owner. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, now we're at the point of council discussion. I'm sorry, your time is up. Yeah, sorry. So we're now at the council discussion.
And I'm inclined to make a motion to continue the hearing for a couple of reasons. There are some legal issues here that I'm less clear about right now than I was when I came into this proceeding. And I'm also concerned about a decision of this significance being made by a bare quorum of the council. We typically handle land use proceedings with all five members of council here. We benefit immeasurably from the discussion that comes from the mayor, Commissioner Fritz, and all the commissioners engaged. And because there's a legal question that has been raised about the standard of review, and it's a novel question which has not been, in my experience, raised before about what state law does or does not prescribe here, and because I think I would benefit from having a full panel decide this question, and also because there's a little additional factual issues that I'm going to be talking to council about in terms of a follow-up memo. I'm going to propose that we set this over to a time certain when the mayor is back, and as part of my proposal, I guess I would request that we solicit from the applicant a voluntary waiver of the 120-day requirement so that we operate within the legal framework.
I would think that would be a mandatory requirement.
Pardon me?
It would be mandatory that you receive that in order to do the continuance.
Let me put it this way. If I had to vote right now, I'm not prepared to affirm the hearing officer's recommendation until I've had the chance to do some additional work. So it's in the hands of the applicant, but my preference is to do this in a voluntary way.
And I'm sorry, where are we at the 120-day clock?
The 120 days expires September 19th.
Oh. I don't know when the mayor, Carla, when is the mayor due back?
He's actually back next Wednesday, but Commissioner Novick is gone until, we don't have a full council until October 1st.
Well, that's in light of the fact that we've had a preview that there could be legal issues that we litigate until my son graduates from college, and he just started his fifth grade today or yesterday. I would ask that this proceeding be continued to a time certain, first week in October, when we have a full complement of the council, and also that the applicant agree to a extension of the 120-day clock.
No. Okay. That has been the suggestion. Does the appellant wish to weigh in on the question of the 120? The applicant. Okay.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Mike Robinson, I appreciate what Councillor Fish had to say, but we're not going to extend the clock. It ends now on September 19th.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Mr. President, may I ask a question of Commissioner Fish?
Yeah.
Would you feel better if we had a postponement that simply until next week, although I couldn't be here, then two other members of the council could, and you could have further opportunity to discuss the legal issues with the city attorney?
Yeah, you know, the mayor in a prior hearing expressed some concerns that he had generally with this area of the law. Commissioner Fritz is the commissioner in charge, is by tradition the commissioner in charge, has a voice in our deliberations. We obviously all have to come to our own conclusions.
Right.
And I would say yes, Steve, with no disrespect to your participation and recognizing that you have a long scheduled honeymoon, I would say that's a preference. But I've also made it clear that I'm not prepared to affirm the hearing officer's decision if I don't have the additional time to do my own due diligence. So either way, but I think that would be a good compromise.
What does next week look like for full council or four-fifths of the council, I guess, I should say?
The morning session, we have nothing. So a 9:30 time certain would work.
On Wednesday morning?
Mm-hmm, the 10th, September 10th, 9:30 a.m.
Is that okay with BDS staff? Does that?
The morning of 10th, next Wednesday, September 10th, 9:30.
Hold on a second. Okay. All right. Attorney, you want to weigh in on this? And then we'll allow Mr. Robinson.
Yes, briefly.
Okay.
Just have the council keep in mind that whatever decision you come to, it will likely require revised findings, which would have to be completed and adopted prior to the expiration of the 120-day clock to prevent a mandamus action in.
A mandamus action, meaning going to court to force us to act?
Yes.
But what's the effect of not acting within 120 days? Is the underlying action deemed affirmed or denied or neither?
If we go to court and a mandamus, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, the court can order us to approve the application.
Well, we're not trying to create a job opportunities unnecessarily for lawyers, but it has been my experience, I will say to the applicant and his able advisor, that these things are always best done in a collegial sense of give and take. And when the council, and particularly council members that are willing to spend the time to be thoughtful about this, say that they need additional time to render a thoughtful decision, it's unprecedented in my experience to have someone not agree to a waiver of the 120 days. That is your privilege, but it would be the first time in my memory that that has been an issue in these proceedings.
Okay, so I'm inclined to grant the continuance, but I'm going to give Mr. Robinson 30 seconds to opine on that.
Thank you, Commissioner Saltzman. I'm just curious, what is it you are doing? Are you continuing? You've closed the hearing. Are you reopening the hearing, continuing that to, what was the date, September 10th?
September
10th. Or are you closing the hearing and coming back to deliberate on the 10th? Because I am not here on the 10th, so my client won't be represented.
We have a bit of a Hobbesian choice here, sir. We've asked your client if they would extend the 120-day clock as a courtesy to the council, which is taking very seriously the legal arguments you've made and wants to engage them. And you've done a fine job representing your client to this point.
Just until the last point there.
No, you've done a very fine job representing your client's interest to this point. All I can tell you is it would be unprecedented for someone in your situation not to give the council the courtesy of an extension.
I wish I could do that. I'm not prepared to do that now. But I appreciate your point of view, and I agree with you about collegiality. My only question was to ask what you're doing. I'm already committed to things on the 10th of September that will preclude. What time was it,
Commissioner?
9:30. What time?
9:30 in the morning.
Yeah, I apologize. So perhaps I can make other arrangements for representation that morning, if that's your wish. But I guess I would say I don't. I think you could close, I will only say I think you can close the hearing, close the record, and still do the due diligence that you believe is necessary. And thank you for your time.
Okay, thanks. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and continue the hearing, keep the record open until September 9:30, September 10th. And that will allow us hopefully to reach a deliberation with four-fifths of the council?
I'm sorry to have to clarify. This is an on-the-record hearing, so the record has actually been closed the entire hearing. So I want to make it clear that the record is actually closed.
Okay.
Yes?
Okay. Yes, the record is closed then. So we're just continuing the deliberations until September 10th at 9:30, and council will deliberate with four-fifths of its body and reach a decision.
Then I suppose we need clarification on that.
Continue our deliberations to the 10th.
So no testimony, I'm sorry, Commissioner Saltzman, no testimony will be allowed on the 10th, or it will be allowed on the 10th?
Okay. Okay, we'll have the option of asking staff or you for additional legal interpretations. But no additional testimony.
I think that actually probably would be a problem. I think you'd probably need to grant equal time.
Okay, equal time to the neighborhood to the Woodstock Neighborhood Association and to the appellant.
So might I?
I'm sorry, the applicant.
If the question, it seems like there's two issues here. One is a legal interpretation, and I'm prepared to discuss that as needed with Commissioner Fish. I don't think that requires, in fact, generally don't give legal advice to counsel on the record because that waives our attorney-client privilege. The second seems to be that, Commissioner Fish, you had wanted to have a greater participation by counsel, and that
right.
does not require testimony by the parties. Now, if the parties want to testify and you want to allow them, you can do that. I'm just trying to make it really clear. We need to grant equal time if they're going to testify.
May I make a suggestion to you?
Yes.
And I'm responding, is that allowed?
Yes.
So here are circumstances under which the applicant would extend the clock. I'm trying to think how to do this. If the council's preference is to have more than a bare quorum, at least four or five members, it sounds like that would take the council into October.
First week in October.
So if you... Well, here's my concern. I'm happy to extend the clock. I'm not extending anything right now. I would be happy to talk with my client, and if he agrees, offer an extension of the clock if it's for purposes of allowing you to close the hearing, no more testimony by anyone, and then deliberate on a date certain that's further out than the current end of the 120-day period. My concern, since you've been so candid about your views, my candid view is I don't have, as an applicant, I have nothing to gain by, even though the record's closed, the reality is you got a lot of out-of-record testimony today. And that's just going to continue, and you get more people. It really serves no interest to continue the hearing. So if you need time to gather more members of the council, I can talk to my client about that. If, on the other hand, you wanted to keep the hearing open, I might agree to that and extend the clock, but I would want final written argument. So we bear the burden of proof. And your process as for appeals is a little unique. They get to go first. They get to go last. So in return for doing final written argument where we've heard everything, perhaps a new legal position, all the argument, then we could extend the clock. So perhaps I could talk, for now, do what you feel like you need to do. But you've heard what I would, under the circumstances, where I'd be comfortable recommending this to my client.
Can you just for my benefit, when you say you want to submit final legal argument,
final written argument.
And you would do that when?
So I have two thoughts. If you just want to continue, if you want to close the hearing, as Lindley said, you've closed the record at the conclusion of the hearings officer proceeding. If you want to continue the hearing for purposes of getting a date where all five of the members can be here, I can talk to my client about that. But that would mean nobody gets to come up and testify again. Now, your rules probably, may I ask your counsel a question?
Yes.
Do your rules allow council members to ask people questions as long as they stay on the record after the hearing is closed?
The record does not specify, or the code doesn't specify whether that's permitted or not.
Okay.
But if we don't take any more testimony and we gave both sides the chance to submit final legal argument.
I apologize. Please continue. I'm sorry.
We have in the past allowed submissions of final statements, but we've extended the courtesy to both sides. So that it's even-handed, then it's a question just of the council deliberation.
Yeah, I apologize. I'm probably not being very helpful to you. State law is, in Lindley and I have a good faith disagreement about what state law provides. State law provides the applicant with the right to make final written argument after the record is closed to all other parties. And so I guess I've got two thoughts without trying to make this too complicated because I...
It's getting very close to becoming overly complicated, and
it's probably already crossed the line. Wait, I'll tell you. May I make a suggestion, Commissioner Saltzman?
Yes.
Why don't you just consider whatever motion you have before you, and in the meantime, I'll talk with your city attorney, and perhaps we can come up with something.
And it is with the understanding that it is not my intention to seek more testimony next week, Mr. President. It is to have the deliberations, which includes whatever the will of the council is going forward and how they address this case.
Lindley?
So if council isn't interested in more testimony, I'm hearing Mr. Robinson say that he would consider talking to his client about an extension that would simply allow continuation of the deliberation. So you don't have to do it today with three. You could do it with five. And that there would be no further written argument, nothing. It would just be your deliberations taking place once you have five members. And he would, it sounds like he could probably convince his client that that was a good idea.
Counsel, what I'm also hearing, though, is he has to have those conversations. So my sense is it makes more sense to keep next week as a control date, have something that we come back to and discuss. If by then we have an agreement as to how we'll handle the case, we can move forward. If not, we would begin our deliberations next week. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that sounds good.
More sense.
So if we will continue the deliberations only until Wednesday, 9:30, September 10th, and that's where we will end. And if we hear from the, let me get this right, if we hear from the applicant in the meantime that they're willing to wait until there's a full council, then we will make a decision at that time next Wednesday.
Good.
Okay, so we're continued until the 9:30 on September 10th, and we stand adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dan.